I would not say no. I would not say no to a bowl either.
Okay. Hey, I got you guys jackets, you know.
Yes, and we really love them. I still have mine.
It's still in the closet. Don't ask me to button it.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen.
I got a few jackets like that, too.
You got any more? You got any? Are there any leather ones left over? Like bomber jackets?
No, there are no BattleTech Center leather ones left over.
Oh, man. I wish I'd scarfed up one of those while I could.
I tried to convince Mort to go that route. And he was like, why did you promise them jackets? And I went, well, you know. So all you guys got.
I don't know, Mort. Why did we promise you a show?
Yeah. I didn't get a jacket, though. I didn't get a jacket until I left the company.
I appreciate mine. Don't get me wrong. I love mine.
Yeah, but you want the Letterman jacket. I know.
You seen that one?
Oh, I got one of them. They're great.
Serious.
Oh, yeah. No, it was very, very serious. Oh, God, I totally forgot about... No, I hadn't forgot about 5A. But, yeah, 5A was... I was delivering, I don't know, Kurt, was it 3 or 4 episodes ahead by that time?
At least. I think I saw a couple of things from episode 8 and 5A.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, the elemental sequence, I remember, was not part of it. But you guys did a tremendous job doing a Ginger is drunk and Gilligan and this professor have to talk about.
What's kind of funny is we had an editor who would ask me about the finer points of BattleTech lore as we were cutting those first 4 shows. And I would explain, you know, what was in the source books or the novels or whatever I'd been given, or even just, you know, an email from Sam. We had email then, Sam. We did have email, Sam.
Did we?
We had email, yes. it wasn't very good email. It was in cuneiform, but we did have email. We
did have emails. Was it an AOL address or something?
I can't remember. It was, you know, there was actually, there was, it, the modem was novel, but there was email.
Okay.
Anyway.
Because part of my brain, it does remember me responding after the meeting with Karen and you guys, where we went. Faxes. You know, we don't have something. And I do remember writing saying, okay, we'll get all this crap together, but I don't have to do anything. Good job.
Anyway, so we had the editor who would ask me about, you know, the finer points of mythology, and I'd explain, and he'd go, well, how do we know that? And I would say, it'll be in the study guide. And then this episode came along and essentially was the study guide.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah,
halfling editors.
Everybody
got to
speed on how the universe was put together and all the ethos and all the different characters. It succinctly encapsulates everything. So,
I thought you guys did a great job with that, and you know, there was enough new stuff that the audience, you know, as small as they were,
it's the number best
one among 16 to 24-year-olds.
Yeah, that's true.
It's the best.
We did it in about a week. I think maybe not even.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was much less than a week. I think we found out about it on Tuesday at the earliest, maybe even Wednesday.
Okay. Here was what happened.
And we were on the air on Saturday morning.
Yeah. Here's what happened. It was a Friday morning, and we had managed to get 4 shows on the air, which was enough to justify repeating episode 1. So my wife was visiting me in my office at that time. And by an odd coincidence, a year or so earlier, it had been her office when she worked for a TV movie producer who had a housekeeping deal with Saban. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'm walking her to the elevator, and Eric Rollman is walking the other way. And I'd just gotten whatever fax it was that said we weren't going to get, remember faxes? That we weren't going to get the next show in time. And I just said to Eric, okay, so, you know, we just got word that the next show is not coming in. And Eric, he was the VP of production. He says, well, then I guess we're in repeats. And then my wife cleverly said, you know what? You should just take episode 1 and dub new dialogue since nobody understood it anyway. And this
wait a minute. It was her fault?
And you know, when they talk about a light bulb going on over somebody's head, that is, I swear to God, that's what happened. If I didn't see the bulb, I saw the face that goes with the light bulb. And he said, let me make a call. And 10 minutes later, we were committed to episode 5A. And I said to my wife, what? She goes, I was joking. I go, don't joke like that in front of the VP. And because she'd been at Saban before, she goes, that guy's a VP? I go, yes, he's a VP. He goes, I thought he was like the mailroom guy. I go, no, he's not the mailroom guy. He's a VP. Well, when I was here, he was the mailroom guy. I go, no, he was never the mailroom guy. And so Saturday morning, we convened in the kitchen at Saban on the second floor with bagels and coffee and a notepad and just started to talking about it. And at some point, it became. We began to look at it as an opportunity rather than a burden. But yeah, that blew like the first weekend I was going to have in maybe 6 weeks due to the crazy, crazy schedule we had getting those first four episodes out of the way. The fourth of which was episode 5.
Yeah.
Which is why
I totally forgot
fifth show was episode 5. Yeah, that was the fun part. Shows 3 and 4 were a two-parter. I don't think we got the second part until like 3 months later. So we just went into show 5.
Or do you remember, was that the only switch up there? Do you remember what the actual airing order was?
One, two, three, five, six, eight, because we didn't get 7. 7 and 8 were two-parters. But we didn't get 7 in time. But we had 8. 8 looked pretty good. 8 was from one of the better studios. So here's the fun thing about episode 8. You know, we had that little recap at the beginning. Yeah. So I built a recap for episode 7 to go in front of episode 8, which was fun because we did not have the episode. I had to build a recap for an episode that did not exist.
You had experience doing that a couple like a month before, right?
We'll come back to that one too. So between the CG for episode 7 and the dialogue for episode 7, we kind of, you know, managed to like loop it over some of the footage from show 6. We cobbled together a 30-second recap. And the thing about show 6 that was kind of fun was that came in late too, and we only got maybe 70% of it. All the action scenes had been left out, and we wound up sort of building them. This is pre-digital days. We had the CG, so we did cheat that, but like any explosions, anything that were like stealing it out of other shows and it just, you know, spitting gum together. And the funny thing was, when we got the scenes finally for episode 6, the stuff we cobbled together was actually better. I think we left it in.
Well, if I remember, we had like 3 different animations studios doing the cell work, right?
Officially, we had maybe 3, but one of them, whose name you may recall, well, they were all Korean, actually. One of them then farmed it out to, I swear, it must have been 3 or 4 other studios. So I don't know how many, many people actually worked on the
name. You named a quagmire after one of the production companies.
We named a quagmire after one of the production companies, phonetically.
Phonetically. Jeez.
We will say no more. I don't know if they're still in business.
Okay, so you guys, listening to this makes me feel so much better what we did with this, with the CG, how we cobbled it together and Jordan over-promising what we could do and then me stealing machines to do rendering and, you know.
Oh, there we go. That I didn't know. I just knew that every 10 days or so, I get really cool footage of battle mix.
But you didn't trust me for the first episode. You did all you did the first episode, all the CG parts you covered with cell animation. And that cell animation showed up in 5A, the Battle of Somerset Academy.
Now, I had forgotten that. Okay, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
So the Battle of Somerset. Yeah, you covered it because you didn't trust the amateur wackadoodles who were saying, we can do this.
We wanted to make sure.
I was the amateur wackadoodle.
We wanted to make sure that no matter what, we had the footage that we needed for the episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's our story, and we're sticking to it.
Yeah, no. I totally believed it. I wasn't convinced we could fulfill what was promised to you until the pipeline started moving right and we started delivering about episode 3.
I just remember
I just the conversation sat there and worried about it.
I just remember the conversation with one of your CG people who said he didn't think we actually wanted the axe to move.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no.
It was one of the
when you guys
oh, well that's them, different. That's going to take longer. Of course we want the axe to move. Sorry, Bob.
We were told several things. One of them was that we couldn't make the axe man swing his axe, and I came up with the battle cry, "Don't make me swing this." And the other thing we were told was that the toad suits couldn't fly, and I'm thinking, why can't the toad suits fly in CG? And I'm like, you know what, you can cut and paste that stuff, they're going to fly. And they made them fly.
Okay, I before we go on, I want to make sure our audience understands the terminology. When I say CGI, I mean the computer graphics, all the enhanced images. When you say CG, are you talking the cell animation?
No,
we're talking the same thing you are. We're just leaving off the eye because there's no eye in Battletech.
Who the hell said they couldn't fly? We were flying all over the place.
Somebody said that they couldn't make them fly, and I said, we're absolutely making them fly.
My wife.
But no, they're not saying that we can't do it.
Okay, that did not come from me.
Okay, I'm not saying it did. But
this is a good time to throw people under the bus.
I think so, because we got them. They were flying, right? They were swinging the axe.
5A has pound for pound more CGI than any other episode.
Yeah.
You know, because we had pulled so much stuff together, we were able to do an episode that was like a substantial amount of it. The problem with the CGI initially when we were first putting the series together was that it looked too good. It looked like it was for what then would have been $100 million movie, and you know we were cutting that into Saban animation was kind of a non-starter. So we asked you guys to dumb it down, don't make them wireframe, but make it a lot more simple. Okay. And the computer animators were really unhappy that they could make us a Porsche and we were asking for a VW. But
I've heard you say that before. And I think what you guys saw were our 30-second clips that we took 5 days to fucking render. And so, you know, the green... there's an actual term for it I learned later, but I don't remember anymore. But the green outlines and the wireframe stuff was actually something I said, hey, let's, you know, do some wireframes and stuff. So, and I wasn't directly involved with you, the two of you, until after Mort and Jordan and Karen.
Karen.
Did that whole thing. Though I think I interviewed you and Marty at one point. Thank God I got you guys. I'm sorry. There was one writer came in and said, well, no, the mech shouldn't do this. They should fly around and do this. And I'm going, oh, please, no.
We had a timing director that kept trying to get the mechs to fly. He would put notes on the story. Why don't the mechs just fly away here? Because they don't.
Yes, they have jumped.
Why don't you, when you're stuck on the 405, fly away.
Right.
Same reason for the mechs.
But what you guys saw initially were things that we were doing for the Battletech centers as, you know, promo loops. I'm glad someone told you, hey, you know, one, you guys came back and said, dumb it down. And that somehow got to us, because...
My exact words were, you know, we're animating this in the Philippines, right? but it hurt me to say that, but it was true.
You're not cutting into James Cameron footage here.
Yeah, Well, I'm glad because it would take 8 hours to render all the CGI, which I think was 5 minutes we agreed to you.
Three?
Good.
Average of three. Everybody had 3 minutes that year.
Yeah, okay. So
ours was the only one integrated into an actual storyline.
Right. Yeah. We actually were the first ones to do this.
But what I liked about it was what we really presented, and I mentioned this in the other podcast, was this was essentially what virtual reality would look like to a cartoon character. And I just thought that was just, I don't know if that was anybody's goal going in, but it was damn brilliant.
Oh, yeah. 1994?
1994. I mean, I just feel like it was awesome.
Yeah.
Bob, the first time Bob saw it, he goes, "We're going to be heroes." And here's the thing. We weren't, but still, it was extremely cool.
Yeah. Well, it's the only way you get through this type of crunch is you gotta be totally gaga for the production. You know, because you just kill yourself. You know, getting through the crunch, dealing with long hours, things not going right, having to do things, and if you don't love what the end product's going to be or what your vision of the end product is, you're never going to make it.
It's the glamour of show business.
And game design.
I want to take that opportunity to circle back because my recollection of how things started varies a little bit from Kurt's.
That's often the case. Welcome to BattleTech Rashomon, everybody.
Yeah. 25 years later.
There's four of us.
I don't remember that.
I think that we found out on like Tuesday or Wednesday, certainly Wednesday at the latest, that we had to do 5A the way that we had to do it. And from my recollection, it was actually Karin who said we need to have a new episode because
after Eric got on the phone to her.
Yeah. After four
episodes, I saw the light bulb. Maybe Karin had a light bulb too.
It could have happened concurrently. It could have happened
with Karin. Maybe it was a fluorescent. But I saw the light bulb.
Okay.
Well, I know is there was a phone call. And I think all of us were on it. And somebody mentioned, we're too short. You know, it's been four episodes. We can't do a repeat. I do recall someone saying we can't do a repeat. I assumed it was Karin because the rest of us were,
Please, her name is Karin.
Karin?
Karin.
Was I calling her the wrong name?
Just for 30 years.
For 30 years?
But here's the thing, we were told on Wednesday that we had to do this. And so Karin and Kurt and Marty and I sat in a, what do you call it? An editing booth. We sat in an editing booth and we played all the episodes that we had and looked at all the footage. And we, we outlined, okay, this is how it should work. The first act is an overall on the war. And the second thing is about... the technology. The third thing is about the specific characters. And then somebody had to write this as a script overnight. So,
that may have been on a Tuesday. The edit bay may have been on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And we spent like all day on it. And then I went home. It was like 5 or 6 at night. And I started writing. And then at 2:30 or 3 in the morning, Marty gets a phone call like, okay, here's the handoff. And so it's 3 a.m. and we're modeming. And of course, the modems back then, you'd say like 1%, 2%, 3%. I'm like,
miles through the snow to get to the modem.
Yeah.
Uphill. Go through. Don't make me have to remodem this over and over. And then, we had the script and then we went into the edit bay again. And this is the most impressive thing to me is Kurt was able to he changed all the lip flap. So if you look at the characters' mouths, it looks like they're supposed to be saying the things that they're saying, even though they were saying other things in other scenes.
It helped that they barely looked like it when they were supposed to.
You know, the remastered guys would have appreciated knowing that, because there was a lot of back and forth of like, it's synced here, but it's not synced here. What's going on? It's like half a set.
Okay. Welcome to the joys of 1990s animation production. My philosophy was,
If it closes
at the right time. If you're off at the beginning, it's going to be like, you know, a second before anybody notices you're out. So if you can get back by then and at least have their mouth closed at the end of the line, then you have achieved lip sync.
Yeah. Nailed it.
And you might think I'm exaggerating. I'm not. What was fun, were you in on any of the ADR sessions, Bob? It was, I know Karen and I were, because one of the actors thought we did a better job of directing than the regular voice director.
Oh, that surprises me so much. It was great. During the first recording session, I'm going to back up a little bit. When we first did the character breakdowns, we talked to the director, and, you know, I thought we came up with these really wonderful, fresh characters, you know. You know, I thought Adam was like, you know, this earnest leader, Kylie, who is this. And so we're talking to the director, and he goes, oh, yeah, this character, oh, yeah. And everything to him was such a cliche that by the end of the meeting, I was just despairing. I'm like, I thought I was doing good, but I guess I'm just a hack. And then we had the first episode, and I like to write like sideways dialogue. I don't like write, you know, declarative, like, look, it's coming this way, because you can see it's coming this way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, after a character's had a fist fight, I have them look at someone else and so how was your day? It's like that kind of dialogue. Mm-hmm. And so What the director did was he took all the dialogue and got rid of all the descriptions, so all you had was the dialogue. That way he could tell people what was going on to kind of justify his existence, I imagine. And so because the dialogue was sort of like sideways, he's like, I don't understand this at all. This is the worst dialogue I've ever seen. And he stormed out. He was going to leave and quit. And Karin sat down in the seat and goes, okay, guys, next take. At which point the director, you know, allowed that he might give us a second chance and came back in.
remember episode 7?
Yes, I do.
So episode 7, I can't remember the name of episode 7. That's where we have our quagmire, which shall remain nameless in this conversation. Opens with Malthus and, God, I forgot her name. Was it Kristen? Not Kristen. Was it Kristen? No. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Yeah, they were battling.
I was testing you. They're in a fight to the death. And he's got the director, the voice director, has them doing, I don't know, like they're at a tea party exchanging Oscar Wilde witty banter.
They're fighting in zero G.
Yeah. And they get through, I don't know, the first page maybe, and, you know, stop for breath, and Marty goes, Stu, these characters are actually in a fight to the death here. And he's looking at the script and says, well, where does it say that? And it's like the first line of the script was, Kristen are in a fight to the death. And it's, you know, and that was kind of typical of the care lavished on BattleTech in the recording booth. But the fun thing was when one of the ADR sessions for 5A, the guy playing Adam, I don't know, he got maybe a third of the way through, blew the line, and just let forth this dream of profanity. And the amazing thing was, it synced up perfectly. and Karin and I just sat there for like 5 minutes playing that back constantly, because we were just so amazed at how he managed to.
He's a professional.
To swear to the animation.
I don't think you were there for the ADR. I don't remember being there for the ADR, but I do remember being there for the edit when you were putting together all the ADR stuff with the footage. And I was amazed. I mean, you know, I was
the
amazed.
The one thing Saban taught me was how to put Band-Aids on things. And this whole episode was a Band-Aid.
I was surprised when we got the first episode. I saw it about a week before it aired, and so I saw a rough cut of it, and I was everything looked choppy, everything looked terrible. It was just like, oh my God, you know, we've blown it. This is going to be a terrible show. And then a week later, when it aired, I'm going, wow, this is fantastic. So, you know,
I knew that was going to happen.
Kurt is the greatest producer, and his ability to post things and make them wonderful, it cannot be overstated.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I spent, a certain amount of time briefing Sam on what that first show was going to look at, what we're going to get. Because this is again, the pre-digital days. What we would get to play around with was what's called a work print. The studio would send us a negative, and then they'd send us a print on low-quality film, because you don't want to be handling film any more than you have to, because every time you handle it, you damage it.
Yeah.
So, you know, this was the version that we could damage. It existed pretty much for that. So... consequently, you know, what we got back was actually a very good looking work print. You know, we cut it, you know, we kind of, like I say, I spent a certain amount of time briefing Sam on what was going to happen, what he was going to see, what he wasn't going to see.
Yeah, you warned Sam, me about
Sam. Sam was actually on vacation though. Oh. When the work print came in and we had to cut it and send it out. And yeah, everybody was a little surprised that it wasn't a finished show. But it, you know, wasn't supposed to be a finished show.
Oh, I was in Disney World. Yeah.
Well, on some level, we were all in Disney World.
Yeah. So you ended up with Mort or Jordan yelling. Yeah. Okay.
What is this? Sorry. What is this? You can see the splice marks.
Yeah,
what the hell is it?
It's like, okay. I apologize.
It's the work print.
Yeah.
And then I explained at one point, the car, and I said, look, you know, this is like 40% of the show. The other 20% is color correction of the negative, so it's clean. You have clean picture, and about 20% is sound effects, and the other 20% is music. So you know this is a very nice 40%.
Yeah,
it's a shitty 100%, but it's not 100%. It's a nice 40%.
You know,
the glass was 40% full.
Right,
Kurt. That brings up a question. You know, a lot of people really love the intro music. You know, who did that? What is the backstory on that? And do you remember?
That was Saban's music department. I mean, they had Saban had a very excellent. They started with exactly that kind of thing. They would get Japanese cartoons and cut them and dub them and put new music on them and put basically repost them. They would start with the Japanese 40% and had their own 60%. And this was their forte. This was their business. And they had just an excellent team for that. So the music, you know, the music department was very good. And they gave us that very cool theme. The first pass was a little didn't sound that intense. A certain amount of this show, I think they were trying to demonstrate what their musical chops were, and I had to kind of explain, no, that's really nice jazz fusion you did there, but it's not right for this show. So then they came back with what you hear, and it was extremely cool.
I really liked all the music in the show.
Yeah, we got like three different theme songs, one of which was somebody saying BattleTech like repeatedly.
I'm happy to say I never heard that one.
Yeah,
pull those out of the archive. Let's share those.
I like
BattleTech. Why not like, watch BattleTech?
BattleTech. Don't know.
Pitch that now.
Yeah.
I just musically spilled water.
Yeah.
No, I guess it was based on that new Spider-Man cartoon where the lyrics were Spider-Man. Radioactive Spider-Man.
Does whatever a spider can.
No, that was the good song.
That was the good song,
that
right.
That was the good song.
I marvel that cheesy song, which I'm sure nobody spent a whole hell of a lot of time on, is iconic all this time later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a metal riff on it somewhere on YouTube. That's
Ramones did a cover version, which was pretty
cool. Ramones did a great version of it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Ramones tend to do great versions of things.
Interesting. Is he strong? Listen, bud. He's got radioactive blood.
That, for my money, is the finest couplet in the English language.
You're funny.
You cannot beat it. That is the pinnacle of human achievement right there. I'm only half
guys, kidding. I've got a couple fan questions here. Let me shoot them at you.
All right. So, are they about Spider-Man? Because we're totally in that group now. Right.
Bob, this one was a good one for you. It was from Alabaster. What was it like adapting a fairly mature setting for a show aimed at kids?
I always like the idea of writing over the audience and having them come up to us. I don't want to write for 7-year-olds or 6-year-olds. So having worked on X-Men and Batman, and also when we did Beetlejuice, we were trying to be wacky and irreverent like the Warner Brothers shows. So I wanted to write mature television for Saturday morning. And so this was a golden opportunity because, you know, this is a very serious-minded world. And we could tell very serious-minded stories. And I looked at it as an opportunity to do a novel for television. So we did a novel in 13 chapters. And yeah, I love the idea of writing over the audience, because if you write over the audience, they'll come up to your level, you know? You don't have to dumb it down for them at all. You know, I was writing for an audience I figured was like, you know, high school or college. So like, you know, 15, 16 to maybe 20, 22, whatever.
16 and, to 24, according to Nielsen.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah. And so
you were great for that demo.
I succeeded in getting the audience that we didn't want.
Maybe the audience that you wanted, but not the toy company.
Yeah,
that is the audience Sam wanted.
The key. I was writing. We were publishing games for that demo. That exactly, and you guys wrote to it, and we tried our damnedest to present stories and imagery that matched.
Tycho would have loved it if we'd gotten the 6 to 11-year-olds. They would have given us a second season, because we delivered them, but you know, lower, and we got such a big audience from the older audience, they figured, okay, well, our budget would be better spent on advertising than on doing a second season.
Yeah.
So I wrote myself out of a job is what I did.
I do have to say, maybe if the show had aired at a time other than 11:30 on Sunday morning, it might have attracted perhaps more of that target audience.
10:30 in Chicago.
On a Sunday morning?
Saturday.
Saturday
morning, right after everybody else's cartoons were done. That's when ours came on.
Right when the kids 50. Went out to play.
The
parents said, go out and play.
Yeah.
I believe half our audience was my parents.
Yeah. One of the things that, you know, I would get a script and I'd put on my BattleTech hat and, can I say, give
that's,
you notes?
That's a literal BattleTech hat.
Well, this is not, but I do have a little battle tag now. Uh-huh. But I, you know, and I would go, no, this isn't how this works. No, you got to do this. No, you got to do this. You guys were pretty good about not mocking me to my face when I did that. And I really appreciated that.
No, you know what? No, it's quite the opposite, in fact. I was relying on you to tell us where we went wrong. Because there was one episode where it's like they're shooting at our drop ships. That's, you know, that's a
direct jump ships.
That's a direct violation of the Articles of War. And you were like,
there's no convention.
There's no such thing as the Articles of War. It's the Ares Convention. And I'm like, great, terrific. It's like, I wanted to get things wrong so that you tell us what the actual terms were.
Oh, that's so that what you were
make
doing.
It match.
That's so his story now.
Whenever you gave us the terminology, I was always grateful.
Well, and I really, really respected that you guys, you know, gave it to me with enough times that I could read it and get it back to you with those types of notes.
And for my part, I figured I'd been entrusted with the universe.
Yeah. and you know, so was I, you know, and I was doing the same thing that I did to any of my novel writers, any of the game writers, is, you know, make sure that it all held together.
That was super crazy, was part of it.
And what happened in my mind in the Somerset Strikers is part of the clan invasion story. Now I know that the people who've taken over over the last 20 years have come up with this, that the show is a, Travis, right? Yep. You told me this one.
Yeah,
it's a propaganda piece.
Yeah, propaganda piece from Corita? Or
is it a propaganda piece that appeals to 16 to 24 year olds? That's what I want to know.
Join the army. Defeat the clans.
No, it's fiction. They did it right. They nailed their 6 to 11 audience.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Steiner propaganda.
In a different universe.
Yeah, yeah, right.
No, but all of the
major events, you know, stayed in BattleTech, you know, and so Franklin is still there. You know, his granddaughter ended up becoming coordinator because the line got eliminated at some point. You know, Adam Steiner eventually became Archon, you know, after opposing Victor.
I knew that lad was going places.
All kinds of stuff. So yeah, it's definitely got incorporated there.
Ciro's still an asshole.
Mm-hmm. Bob, you answered this in our chat, but somebody did ask about season two. So, you know, can you give us a little, you know, another little kind of what if could have been of what your plans were for season two?
I wanted Adam to become like Captain Ahab. I wanted him to be so angry that his people were taken that he was going to go after Malthus, and he was going to be Captain Ahab going after him. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, I was thinking that Malthus was disgraced because he had lost, and also because he was off the reservation. He was given a specific mission and he deviated from it, and he was losing battles. And so I wanted to play with him being disgraced and having to come back from that. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff I would have wanted to play with. I love the fact that the last episode ends with the line, you know, now our real battles begin. You never get to see
them. Yes, it was in the corporate boardroom of the toy company there.
Those are the bookends. Now our real battles begin, and how come the biggest crooks put their names on buildings?
So there's a question about toys that could have been. You know, Sam, I don't know who might know this. I mean, maybe it's Karin question, but, you know, there are pictures of a Vulture out there, and I know the Mad Cat was kind of the big lawsuit mech. Were there any other toys that kind of were in the line that didn't make it through?
We did not see any new toys. All they did was reskin. You know, they had the line that they released with the show. Mm-hmm. And then the following year they released a line for the collectors, which were reskinned and repainted. They specifically told me, we're not going to be doing any, you know, advertising, you know, but we're going to put this line out so that collectors grab them up.
They must have grabbed them up because I never saw them.
I actually saw them in Toys R Us, and I made a mistake. I didn't buy any because they didn't give us any for free. In our contract, we were supposed to get 36 copies of each one of these bloody things. And so I've got a couple of, still in the box, but they're all first season. Second season one.
That could have been several generations of Lewis's playing BattleTech. That is a missed opportunity.
Yeah. But no, we didn't. There wasn't any follow-up mechs. We could have done it. You know, from our standpoint, we could have created some and gotten them out. But I don't know. Just as long as they didn't fly, you know.
Well, Travis, you said something about the Mad Cat being part of a lawsuit.
God, you didn't know about the lawsuit?
Oh, you know, I know about the lawsuit, but the Mad Cat specifically.
So the Mad Cat.
The lawsuit, not a Bachal?
Yeah, it was a lawsuit, not a Bachal. So when we first were approached by Tyco, you know, we're getting ready to sign the contract at Toy Fair in New York. And we had also shopped the property to Playmate. So we're all excited. We're getting ready to sign the contract. And Karin and her people were walking through the Playmate display. And at that time, they let other people from other companies would get to walk through as a courtesy. They walked through, and right in front of Karin was a Mad Cat for a new toy line called Exo Squad. And Karin got with Mort and tore up the contract, literally tore up the contract, because Playmate was going to beat us by a year. They weren't ready to be a Me Too product. But she said, look, if you guys are really, really willing to fight for this, you know, we can talk. So that's why we sued Playmate, because they were using, you know, we had approached them, according to people who weren't willing to testify at the trial, there was BattleTech product all over their design group. Technical readouts, things like that. And so we got delayed by about a year, year and a half. But then Tyco went and said, okay, I don't know why she decided to go with us, but she gave us a second chance, and that's how we started this whole thing. But it was a Mad Cat. I mean, literally a Mad Cat. Just sitting there. Interesting thing is, in the response to the lawsuit, they went and said, oh no, it's not a Mad Cat, looks nothing like us, and gave us a sketch of something of a predecessor for this toy and said, this is what it is. I mean, I don't work for them. They're fucking lying assholes. Never get involved in a lawsuit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, yes, that's how the Mad Cat.
The initial development for Exo Squad, and it was called Exo Force. Mm-hmm. And I told the person who was developing it, you can't call it Exo Force. There's a comic at Marvel called X Force. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to come after you. And he's like, no, it's a whole different name. And then they changed it to Exo Squad because they didn't want to get sued.
Well, they got sued by us.
At that point, I don't know that Marvel had the money for a lawyer.
Yeah, well, there's that true. That's true. But it was a nasty thing that we should have. There was maybe an opportunity to settle. We didn't settle. I got the joy of testifying on the stand, and I was testifying about a week before I had resigned, and I was going over into computer games over at Kesmai at the time. So it's a week before, and I'm getting, you know, these guys going, well, BattleTech, here, let me read you this passage about rape. And I'm going, what? What the hell are you talking about? Just not a fun experience at all. Don't get involved in something like that.
Well, let's, Sam, kind of pull you back to the very beginning. I'm curious if, you know, who and where the kind of plot line of Clan Invasion and Adam Steiner kind of came from, and were there other plot lines considered or character arcs considered?
Well, me and Jordan wrote a story. I don't know what you call it, Marty, Bob. We wrote a background piece where Jordan wrote up all the characters, except Bob and Marty added Franklin and a couple other people. But Malthus, Adam Steiner, those were all conceived by Jordan. The background.
Was Ciro there too?
He might have been, although he might have come from you. You guys added a few people.
Because you found Ciro and Stackpole's books.
Yeah, then Ciro came.
You found Franklin.
Well, that was the thing, is Bob Marty actually read the damn books and said, "Hey, Sam, can we use Franklin?" That was actually the first time I really discovered these guys read the books, were cognizant of the fact that I was running a active universe with dozens of other creators who had to be coordinated. And they came to me and said, can we use Franklin? So Ciro might have come from them as well. Unfortunately, I'm not in my place in Chicago. I could have shown you that thesis, or I don't know what the hell it's called. The little,
we'll this go is with the universe, thesis.
These are the characters. little 6-page thing that we.
I'd love to see that read. Sometime. I don't know if I still have that material.
Yeah, I've got it. I'm just not at home. I showed it, Travis. I showed it to you like the first time I did one of these.
Yeah, Sam, scan that and send it over to me. I'd love to share it with the community. It'd be a great little
history. Yeah, yeah. But, we had art in it and, some CGI shot on the cover that was from the Battletech Center.
I love those centers. That was those were fantastic.
Yeah.
Sam, how did you guys decide what mechs you were going to include in the series? How did we get the...
So we told Tyco that you could use any of them that you want. They asked to do the X-Men.
Okay.
We said, you can add to the universe. You give us a couple of ideas you want that you think would sell well as toys.
Wait, so the X-Men was their innovation?
Was theirs. It came from Tyco. The X-Men, Toads, the Inner Sphere battle armor.
Yeah.
That shows up later. That came from Tyco as well.
Okay.
Everything else I think was ours. And it was just part of the universe. And the only thing we told them was that the Omni-Mix, the Summoner, Mad Cat, Vulture, all those, had to be the bad guy mix.
Okay.
Everything
But Bob told me there's no bad guys.
Good
guys in an argument. Good guys in an argument.
Yeah. Just different political and genetic philosophy.
What I loved in the books was that whichever side you were with, you were on their side because we liked the characters and because their point of view made sense. It was like in Game of Thrones where you had, the battle at, the Lannister's castle. Like I was rooting for them, but I also was rooting for the people who were fighting them because they were assholes.
Oh yeah.
And, but we still, there were still people there that we liked, but, but I wanted to have the series be this sort of gray area where, there were no bad guys and our guys were good, but we also saw the other side's point of view. And Karin allowed that, no, we weren't going to go for a gray area. We were going to have a good guy and a bad guy.
Yeah.
And that being said, we articulated what the bad guys felt so well that you could understand and sympathize with them.
I mean, in Battletech, we ended up with a Robert Thurston wrote, "I am Jade Falcon." And he, I think he ends up doing about 6 or 7 Battletech things, all from the clan perspective. And you are rooting for the clan at that time. That was, again, that was one of those things that we were trying to do is, a living, breathing world where you could understand, while you might disagree, you can understand the perspective and why people are motivated by what they do, is motivated by this worldview, and we can understand why they got that worldview because of these events.
One of the other things that Karin said, not just specifically related to Battletech, but that really stuck with me, was let the heroes be heroic, which carried through later episodes of the series and is actually, I think, one of the reasons why Adam actually saves Malthus at the very end of episode 13,
right,
even as he's defeating him.
Right. Yeah. Even though he was electrocuting.
Even though he was electrocuted. Everybody was electrocuted that season because of that scene in Jurassic Park.
Right. Yeah.
There was an X-Men episode where Wolverine just brushes up against a third rail as they're fighting in the subway and just gets up and walks away from it. It's like, no, you right. don't just walk away.
Well,
I'm trying to get the S&P people to go, this is actually like dangerous and imitatable. Do we want kids thinking you can just walk up to a third rail?
Yeah. No, I remember you talking about that electrocution scene and going, oh, this might have some problems because, you know, touching, trying to pull him off while he's being electrocuted. Not something we want to teach 8-year-olds.
Every now and then I thought of the 8-year-olds.
Well,
because my son was 8 and I didn't trust him.
Right.
Well, no, I came up with a way.
Tell you who didn't think of the 8-year-olds was whoever scheduled the when this aired.
Yeah. Well, clearly, I thought of the 16 to 24-year-olds. I wish it would be nice if there had been some kind of objective there.
At least in Chicago, the Tyco ads that ran during BattleTech were all targeted for girls. I told Karin that.
To me.
I
was
like, but you know what? There's your angle for a reboot. If anybody wants to go there.
Yeah.
What really irked me was when our show was on and they would cut to a commercial and there were the Exo Squad.
Yeah.
That was a piss off. I mean, I imagine we were probably doing that to them as well.
I would hope so.
I would really hope so.
I would not assume, but yeah, I would hope so. I mentioned this in the other podcast. The nice folks at Tyco had this really wonderful series of explanations as to why December 26th was the perfect day to launch the BattleTech toy line. Mm-hmm. So I would not assume that the ads were running during Exo Squad.
Their philosophy was that after Christmas, the kids have all this money that they got for Christmas to buy toys.
And it made perfect sense, except for the part where that didn't happen.
Well, in the game industry, our peak season was during the summer and after Christmas, because yes, the kids had had money from grandma and they could buy BattleTech stuff. But our peak was during the summer when they weren't in school and, you know, a week or so after Christmas. So yeah, but this was for 16 to 24 year olds. Oh, geez.
We keep coming back to that.
Yes, we do.
So in my conversation with Bob, we talked about his favorite episode, which was the Star League Cash, and my favorite episode, which was Franklin's backstory. Mm-hmm. So, Kurt and Sam, did you guys have a favorite episode in the series?
Franklin's backstory, which I believe was episode 8, was one of the better ones by virtue of the animation studio. So that was
it was 11 actually, I think.
Was it 11?
Yeah, it was 11.
11? Okay. Yeah.
Bob's yours was 9, right? Is that the number for the
That was 9. The Road to Camelot was number 9.
Yeah.
It was okay. That's my favorite episode and Karin hates it to this day. and Marty just fucking hated it. And I loved it, you know.
Well, here's the thing. None of them were 16 to 24, so what do they know?
You know, the one I like the best, and I think it's an early one, maybe episode 3, is when the clans are invading and the spaceport is being overrun by refugees who are trying to get off, and Adam's got to go, we've got no more room.
I think that was episode
and it's 3. That scene that actually, you know, suddenly I was going, yeah, that's a real story. That's you know, you're showing problems.
I call that playing fair with the audience.
Yeah.
Because when you come up with some bullshit, you know, kind of, if we just, if we recalibrate the phase inverters, it's like, no, fuck you.
Yeah.
Let's play fair with the audience.
I love Technobabble. But no, but in this one, it was, it got across, these guys are scary. There are civilian lives, innocent lives in danger. And the heroes, while they try what they can do, you know, try their best, they can't save everybody. Mm-hmm. And I found that really, that still sticks with me. I got to also admit, I think it was that episode, Franklin's backstory. I don't know who did the cell animation for it, but it was so much better. I was going,
I think it was Coco, who had also done Batman, the animated series.
Okay.
Which is why it was better. Yeah, I mean, the thing about it, you know, that, as you have probably observed, the quality is quite malleable across episodes. Thing about it was, you know, I sent the same level of material out of the country. I did not get equivalent material back all the time. So that's fun. I think my favorite episode would probably have to be the last one, because I think everything came together. Passy, who had done the first two episodes, did that one. So it was a much better level of animation. The story was paying off. There were just compelling character moments. There was, you know, just a nice knockdown, drag out fight. I don't think there was a lot of CGI or as much CGI in that one. But it just was a really good. It's too bad we couldn't, you know, springboard off of that into a second season, but it was just a really nice culmination of everything in the series. And the other one, not necessarily favorite episode, but that last shot in episode 2 is my favorite moment in the series. That's where they're in the jump ship, and we have tied on the porthole, and we pull out as it's pulling away. And what happened was, when it first came in, very, it was out of focus.
Very Empire Strikes Back.
That exactly. It was very Empire Strikes Back. And that was the thing. It came in, it was out of focus. Hopefully not too many people noticed, but it was out of focus. And we had to air it that way. So we fixed it for second airing. But, you know, as Karen is watching it, I go, well, this is, you know, we're going to have to get that in a second airing. She goes, well, that's such a great shot. I said, it ought to be. I stole it from George Lucas.
Something else you stole, by the way, I really admire this. There was an early episode where there was a battle, and at one point, there's just so much craziness going on, and it's like, okay, we're getting a little lost here. What's going on? And you took dialogue from later episodes and put them in to make the scenes a lot more understandable. I don't remember. Do you remember doing this?
No, but that sounds like the press. Like I said, Saban taught me a lot about Band-Aids.
Yeah, I actually recall that. I can't point to it, but I absolutely recall going, I don't remember this when I heard it, saw it for the first time.
It may have been the second episode. There was a battle in the desert, and I think there's just a lot of people running around.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that may very well be, because that one came in short and we had to do a lot of cheating. And if you know that, you'll probably be able to spot the cheating pretty easily.
I just admire the way you were able to do that kind of thing, though. It's like, okay, let's take this from over here and repurpose it.
In those pre-digital days, the fun thing about post was, here it is. This is what you have to work with. Whatever you thought you were getting, this is what you got. And now it has to be a show. What can you do?
Yeah.
Well, Kurt, that brings up a question that came to me, and the fans wouldn't know this, but I noticed this when I was doing the remaster. But there are published episodes with different versions of the same scene. And so in particular, I remember, actually, it might have been Bob's favorite episode, where Kylie and Val are in a cockpit, and I was editing them, and something caught me is that in one of the episodes where I was splicing them together, Val has a neuro helmet. In the other episode, he doesn't have a neuro helmet, where he's piloting this mech. And I was like, wait, these are both like from VHS copies, so these are on there. So somehow two completely, you know, different animations for the same thing got out. Is
we,
that
we a, would I mean... steal storyboard panels.
Okay.
And the neuro helmet.
And I'm
helmet...
talking the entire scene. Like, there was an entire scene with him with a helmet on one copy of the video, and another VH copy. It was a whole scene.
You know what that may have been, depending on when they came in or when they were recorded, because these were things that people recorded that we remastered from, right? Or that
right.
we remastered
yep.
from
yep.
week, like I was involved. There are first and second. There are such things as second airing retakes.
Okay.
First airing, all the shows, all the first shows came in like 2 days before they were supposed to deliver. I mean, we really had no time. I was sitting in edit bays until 3 a.m. for like a solid month, which is why I was looking forward to being in reruns after that 4th episode. So I could go home at some point, maybe while the sun was out. So yes, enjoy episode 5A, everybody.
It was your wife who took that away from you.
My wife, who was complaining that I was never home. That was my betrayal. Okay. What would happen was it would air with a mistake. We had no choice. If you were fortunate enough to see maybe the first 3 episodes of BattleTech when they first aired, the Axeman was white.
Right. Yeah.
Your Axeman.
Our Axeman was white, and this is because in the good old days, in the pre-digital days, color keys would be assigned by, wasn't Pantone, there were different palettes, but anyway, there was a number. They would, you know, they would color it, and the colorist would color it physically on the model, on the drawing, and also, you know, write a value number. And the X-Men was supposed, Axeman, I think, was supposed to be like X-10 was the darkest gray. And instead they put X-100, or maybe it was the other way around. But either way, it was the other one. The wrong number was the lightest gray. So, and I know that went through episode 3 because I remember being just terribly, appalled at that point because the animation was, it moved, it was colored. And the Axeman was the wrong color. And my son, after he watched it, you know, at 11:30 on a Sunday morning, even though he was nowhere near 16 or 24 at the time. And he goes, well, this is like the greatest episode. And I go, no, it's like the Axeman. He goes, no, it's like all mechs. This is really cool, Dad. This is the last time anything I did in school, so I remember. Yeah. It did not get fixed till the second airing. And I think maybe we had the repaired scenes by the time we did the compilation. Where you may have seen the helmet, that was a retake we did not get in time, and it was fixed subsequently.
Yeah, and there's other ones where beards disappear and reappear and eyebrows.
That's definitely sounds like retakes. Hey, look, we're lucky everybody's head stayed put.
Well, from what I heard, Kylie's breast line was getting more and more exposed.
We never called a retake on that.
Which was a good reason for it.
Occasionally somebody would say, should we call a retake on that? And I'd say, no.
I believe that Kylie was one of Jordan's characters. Came from us. Came from Jordan. He does, if you look at any NASA product, there is always at least one woman with a low-cut dress or low-cut shirt and tight leather pants. Renegade Legion, BattleTech, Shadowrun, doesn't matter.
Just to be clear, that's an observation, not a criticism.
Right, yes.
Okay, good to know.
Because it was 1994, and that's how we acted back then.
It was a simpler time.
Kylie's top seemed to get... like there was less and less fabric, episode by episode. And I'm thinking, you know, if there was a second season, she would have been topless.
Oh, sounds like a
well that would have kept us solidly in the 16 to 24 demographic.
Yeah, there would have been no pushback from standards and practices out there. I worked for Cartoon Network for 2 years. I've dealt with standards and practice.
Nice.
Oh, do I have stories.
Sam, question for you here from Steven about that original CGI footage. Did any of that end up in the BattleTech compendium or
yes, the black- that's exactly where it ended up. Stills from that shot, which was used at the VWE centers. We played it when we were at Gen Con, and the hardcover version of the compendium, that color plate, all those color plates at the start, all were from that.
Wow. And that was that Venters that
Steve, did well stuff? Steve didn't, so this was actually all done by the VWE guys.
Okay.
And actually the crew that started working on BattleTech when they were trying to figure stuff out. So all those, you know, they were just stills from the stuff. We also did a BattleTech commercial for the toy line that used that stuff. I think I mentioned we had to figure out how to do smoke because some executive at Tyco said, you got to have smoke. Guys, particle effects have come a long way. Back then, particle effects were small bubbles about the size of a dime.
Smoke and water.
Yeah, smoke and water. We couldn't do water.
Water was problematic until fairly recently. And yeah. Somebody, I remember just on a later show that was CG bringing
yeah,
it up.
Yeah, so
and,
we managed to get some, you know, the guys at VWE did it. And that commercial and finally got the smoke to be acceptable to this guy.
Okay.
At Tyco. So, you know, we did some very, very high end CGI stuff, but yeah, unless you were at a VWE center or at Gen Con, all you were able to see were the stills in the compendium and the hardcover edition of the compendium, the soft cover. I was cheap and decided not to run it.
So then this question from Devin, maybe also another Sam one, is in episode 2, the Centurion has some serious jump jets. So is there a variant out there we don't know about? Or was that just a, you know what, rule of cool, we're going to go.
I might have missed it in the script.
Yeah.
And I might have been told, but we need it for the story. Though you got Bob and Marty never really did that to me.
There was a limited jump jet capability for.
And it could be a variant with limited.
That was the thing.
The books, because we wouldn't have added something like that just because it was cool or something.
It also could have been a jump jet low orbit insertion jump pack that the guy hadn't gotten rid of. You know,
he jumped out of a city and landed in a desert. So
what had happened? You ready?
Yep.
This is what I did for a living. So what had happened was the city itself was a depot for weaponry and stuff. Mm-hmm. They were getting overrun. The ground crew slaps these one-time use jump packs that are used for low orbit insertion. And the guy used it to get the hell out of Dodge. What you didn't see because the camera needed to be moved around a bit because Kurt, you know, didn't really want to use the time to show those accessory jump packs falling off. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. I got paid to do this for 10 years. Checkmate.
I'm good. I'll let you go with that.
Glamour show business.
Devin's got more questions because the Centurion jumps a lot more, but we're going to say that he gets re-equipped with one-time use jump jets.
Okay. Then it's a variant that the guy salvaged from there and he got rid of an LRM or an SRM pack.
Talking about saving time, that was the other conversation I routinely had with the video editor was – because, you know, they got into the max by rope ladders, and these things are like, you know, 5 stories tall.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And he kept going, well, how do they get into the max? And I just go, clever cutting.
Yeah, we never explained that one right.
We didn't really want to use precious screen time and studio capabilities to show people climbing up a rope ladder for, you know, however long that was.
So
I think we showed the rope ladder like coming out and down. One of them.
Yeah. There is one scene with Malthus that you guys did where a almost conveyor belt comes out of the mech. I got the cell.
It's like an escalator.
Yeah, like an escalator. I've got the cell and I got two.
Is that
cells.
Episode 1? Because I know we had like a bay for the mechs.
I think it's 3.
Yeah.
Is it 3?
I've got the cell. Yeah.
Maybe.
At home.
Who knows?
And I've got a cell of Adam Steiner jumping down off of his mech, which, you know, looks great. And I've got the cell of Malthus. He just finished walking out of his vulture. You know, it's on my wall. So
I didn't get any cells.
I got cells. I got them framed.
I just got this jacket.
I didn't get any cells at all. I'm sorry, I didn't get a jacket.
So I got cells.
I didn't get any cells. You want a jacket now? We'll trade you for some cells.
Because it wouldn't fit anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine.
So, Kurt, this is partially a fan question, partially a question for me.
Since, goody.
You know, still being involved in the industry, gosh, I can't tell you how many fans are like, what will it take to get a new series? What would it take to get a live action series? You know, as a producer in the business, what is the process for getting a show made? You know, what are those, that's probably a Sam question. Sam, maybe.
Well, I mean, I hate. Okay. Yeah, I think that's a Sam question. I was the guy who came in when the deal was in place.
Gotcha.
If I'd been able to get a deal going, we'd be having a lot more podcasts. All about right.
Sam's been tagged in.
Okay. Question. Well, first off, you got to get the licensing rights from, I think it's Microsoft now.
Okay.
Tops.
I think Tops.
It could be Tops. Microsoft
is video games. Tops is
everything else.
Not everything else, but it's like Ironwind has like.
At the time we sliced and diced the rights. Yeah, it's Battletech. So many different ways that FASTA never got any money. It all went to other entities.
Mm-hmm. WWE.
No anger there though. So first you got to get the rights, then you got to get somebody who has money, who's willing to fund the thing.
Yeah.
Let me throw out there that animation, I know live action is significantly more, but even your basic animation now is anywhere from $600,000 to $800,000 a half hour. So it's pricey now. And I think BattleTech was maybe around 200 back then. And it actually came in over budget, but what the VP said at the time was, well, this just shows that that's how much it costs to make a show. Mm-hmm. So they were pretty philosophical about it being over budget. But yeah, I mean, it's a pricey proposition and the lead time is enormous. So there has to be, you know, a level of
nine
there.
9 months, same as a baby.
Well,
right?
that's per episode.
Okay.
But if you're talking about these days, a series schedule is going to run close to 2 years.
Wow.
And that's rushing. Everybody tells me that I'm working with now.
Yeah, Travis, we did a couple of shows with some animators who were brilliant. Mm-hmm. Right. And what was it? The Germans were getting 3 minutes done with six people over 6 months.
Yeah.
Because they weren't being paid.
Yep.
So yeah, money, get it from and get the rights. And then, you know, you get into, you know, sort of Kurt's world of, okay, so these guys are shopping an idea and they have the money. Who do you go to?
Yeah. There you go, people. So all those Facebook posts, you hit my answer. My answer was always like, how can't we get this made? And I was like, you need money and you need a writer. You know, that's a good place.
Well, we got a writer.
There you go.
We need
money.
If
you need bowls, I can make bowls for you.
600 grand. But if you don't have 600 grand, you can swing over to the Renegade HVG Patreon and support this channel for only $1 to $3 a month. So
there you go. And, push the like and subscribe button, guys.
Exactly. But yeah, I'll give the people in the chat one more chance for some questions if anyone wants to pop them up. But I think we've made it through. Cool. Gentlemen, this has been a ton of fun. So we... you know, it may be a little late in coming, but we very much appreciate the work you did on this series, and it's fun. I've loved sharing it with my then 5, now 6-year-old daughter, and my favorite feedback for Renegade HVG is when fans come to me and they say, thanks for remastering the series. I can share it with my kid now. That's viewable. So,
Travis, you've done a tremendous job. I'm really happy that I can go back and start looking at the show when I, you know, in my dotage. And
I can't take that credit. You know, it is Emil at Art of Battletech who was the brainchild for this project. Stephen Strangeways gets a special recognition. This is a fun story. So Stephen was prepared to do what my original idea was. I forgot who I talked to about rebuilding the entire episode from the other episodes, and had gone pretty far in that before we found people who work professionally in audio and video. And then we had a benefactor that sent us the episode that we needed and some better copies. And so we were able to go back. You know, Steven's work, very much appreciated, even if not realized, kind of got the ball rolling on this project. And then Tom and Chris came in and did the audio and video, which are way better than it was before, because the original ones were just kind of me kind of fiddling in my cheap software with the audio and Emil doing the upscale. But I want to make sure I'm recognizing those guys, because they did amazing work. I am the publisher, you know, I am the editor, but they're the ones that cleaned it up and did the true remaster. So
thank you for cleaning up the episodes. And thanks for keeping it out there, because this is one of the shows that's sort of like lost or forgotten or whatever. And I love the idea that it's out there and people can rediscover it, or people who enjoyed it before can see it again and enjoy it again. I was really happy when I watched the episodes again, because the series, I think the series really, really holds up. So I'm glad that people can see it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks everyone for joining the chat and for your questions. And thanks to Kurt and Bob and Sam for joining us. Yeah.
Kurt, Bob, great seeing you.
Good seeing you.
25 years.
Whether we need to or not.
Absolutely. I got it on my calendar.
I'll have a different cat though.
Yeah. All right. Bye-bye, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. And thanks to the community.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You guys rock.
You guys are the best.
Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye.